Welcome, February, although it is bonus call number two for January. Because we do our calls at the end of the month and now we're doing bonus calls, we bleed into the following month. We are now on our second bonus call. It is February 10th, I believe, 2021, and we are going to go through videos and questions tonight. No question is a dumb question. Please do not be shy. If you have questions about how you can get better, don't hold back. I'm here to help. And this is coming from someone who, when I was 14 years old, I was told by my coach that I asked more questions than any player he had ever worked with. And my question asking has not stopped. I do ask a lot of questions. I'm guilty of that. So let's get started this evening. I am going to pull up some videos here. So bear with me as I do that. As I mentioned, I downloaded several videos as well so that I could pull them up to teach tonight. One thing I always like to talk about on the calls is that the things that I'm going to be teaching, it's a system. So you will hear me say a lot of the things over and over again, and you might not hear it the first time or the second time or the third time, but 6 months later, you'll say, oh, that's what he was saying 6 months ago. So sometimes there's the delayed learning that happens. So I'm just going to keep saying the same mantras, be very consistent with what I think is the most efficient way to learn and improve and balance this sport that we all love. So what I want to do first, I also like to tell people that I am like a broken record because I say a lot of the same things about the serve and about the rest of the game. Looks like I'm logged out of my members area, so just give me a minute as I log in. And again, if you have questions while I'm getting this all set up, you can type them in the chat box. Still loading. I've got some internet issues tonight and some software issues. So things are running a little slow tonight. I think I need to do an update on my laptop. And when I started it, it was going to take 45 minutes and that was going to bleed into this call. So I'm still waiting for it to load up here. In the meantime, I actually do have videos that I can pull up. I just wanted to have access. Oh, here we go. I wanted to have access to the members area so I could show you all a few things to start. Similar to last week's call, and we are ready to go now. We are in business now. Similar to last week's call, what I really want to emphasize that, again, I'm not sure everybody, it's quite clicking for them. I'm going to make two comments tonight. Comment number one, as I share my screen, weather is cold. It's getting cold this week. Okay, so the one thing I really want to emphasize, I'm going down to injury prevention and performance bonus again. If you're not doing these exercises or a combination, if you're not doing at least three of these exercises, if you're not doing the shoulder routine, or if you really want to improve your serve, if you're not practicing these four exercises, if you're not doing some of these in here, then I really think you're holding yourself back in some way, shape, or form. We can only become as good as what our body can do. And so if you look at Tom Brady, who just won the Super Bowl, there is no one who takes care of his body and focuses on his body more than Tom Brady. And it's no accident that he's 43 years old and he's still winning Super Bowls because he has mastered the art and the science of taking care of himself from nutrition, from his fitness, from his pliability or flexibility. And so if you are neglecting this part of your training, I think you're really holding yourself back. And that's why I'm starting the call tonight with this, that I would love to see all Tennis Evolution members committing to all of these exercises or some of these exercises, and really at least three times a day. It only takes three times a week, I should say. It only takes 10 or 15 minutes to do a few of these exercises 3 times a week. So highly recommend that you make this a part of your program. 3 times a week would be nice. I'll give you an example. You could do these exercises 2 to 3 times a week, these 4. And then on the other 3 days, you could do bionic shoulder along with belly lift, alternating arms, and let's say L-DOA. And that would be a nice little program. Or you could do them all on one day and then you have a day off and you can do other things. If you're a platinum member, you have access to flexibility for tennis and strength and mobility. I've got a lot of mobility and flexibility exercises in there as well. I'm going to talk about that tonight with one of my questions. And then you can also really create a nice program just around mobility and flexibility, which a lot of you need. I'll be honest with you. A lot of it we all need. We're sitting in chairs all day. We have previous injuries. This is just so important if you want to be able to do certain things as you age on the court. Okay, so that's my soapbox about the body. And then the second thing that I want to mention before I get into videos, and Herman knows exactly what I'm going to say here, Christy might as well, is that a lot of you are sending serve videos in, and it's great. You're sending me your serve videos, full motion, and I'm able to critique it. Once I critique the video, if you're not serving like Roger Federer, if it doesn't look like Federer or Sampras or a version of my serve, you really want to be spending a lot of time in this half serve motion. Because what I'm seeing is I'm telling people, okay, your elbow, you got to turn more, you got to do this, do the half serve, and then videos are being sent in and you're doing a full motion. And it's just going to be a lot harder to make the changes if you don't break it down into smaller parts. So if you try to hit the ball and if you try to change your technique with your current motion, you're going to find yourself making gains at a very slow rate. So I would highly recommend that you do exercises without serving into the ball, without serving with a ball, and do the half serve. Okay. With that being said, what I want to do is I'm going to handle the first question from Adam tonight. Adam's question. Hi, Jeff. I suffer from knocked knees and a lack of hip mobility. Other than the hip mobility exercises you put on YouTube, are there any other hip exercises you'd recommend? How can I cure knock knees? Is it my diet, exercise regime, or my techniques when I squat? So it's a great question. And Adam and others, I'm going to share my knowledge. I think that I'll probably get 80% there. I think that my physical therapists and chiropractors that I work with consistently can probably answer it at a higher level than I can, but I'm certainly going to take a crack at it. So the first thing I would do with this idea of knock knees. So the idea, I haven't seen the walk yet from Adam, but the idea is that your knees would collapse in or do collapse in when you walk. And so that can be genetic, but you can also work to change that. And the way to do it, and Adam alluded to it, was hip mobility. I would go far to say hip stability. So making sure the outside of your hips are more stable, but also maybe more important is your foot and your ankle function. So do you have flexibility in your ankles and your feet? And so what I would recommend is, first of all, this L-DOA, L5S1 L-DOA is great for aligning the body, the hips and the ankles, and for ankle flexibility. So I would work a lot on that. I'd work a lot on the hip 90-90 to open up the hips. I think those two would go a long way to help. These serve load and coils would be great because this exercise is done with the back leg, but what I teach is that you keep your knee over your toe. So your knees don't collapse in when you do this. You could also do these same type of exercises with your front foot. So doing single leg squats where your knee stays over your toe. And if I'm speaking above your level, if you're not understanding what I'm explaining right now, you can type in the chat box and ask me a clarifying question. But the idea is you want to have your knee aligned over your toe or your foot. You're actually your second toe and your big toe. You don't want it collapsing in any more than that. So you can do these exercises to work on your single leg alignment for your back leg, but you could even adjust this and do the front leg. Now, with that being said, we have programs that can address this. If you go, if you're a platinum member, if you're gold, you won't have access. So you'd have to buy this separately or become a platinum member. But my home workouts course has a whole mobility section. I do three alternating workouts. One day is mobility, another day is strength, and day three is cardio. So every third day I have a full mobility routine specifically geared to open up ankles, feet, and hips. So I would highly recommend checking out the mobility section of this program. Flexibility for tennis. I don't think it's the flexibility part will help the knock knees as much, but certainly opening up your hips, trigger point release, fixing your feet, working on your feet, that could be, those could really help. And then my strength and mobility for tennis course, similar to the home workouts program, I've got a whole section on mobility and activation. So for example, these clams with bands right here, glute bridge with bands, this would be great for hip stabilization. Ankle rocker right here, great for ankle mobility. Adductor, this is your groin. Adductor mobilization would be great. Hip flexor quad mobilization. Basically, you're stretching your hips and your quads. Hip internal rotation. So there's a lot of exercises. Lateral band walk. That would be a great one because when you walk laterally and you push out on the band, you practice keeping your knees out and not collapsing in. So there's a number of resources here that can help you if you want to improve your hip function, your foot function, and avoid that knock knee concept. Okay, let's move on to the next question. And I'm going to try to address folks that I didn't get to last week first. So let me get to Hi right now. And it's actually one video I didn't pull up that I want to see if I can find. So let me just unshare my screen. Christy wanted to say, side note, knees over toes guy on IG is insane. Yeah, I mean, I don't kid around. When I give resources, I'm not messing around. Like, this is the real deal. This guy went from knees over toes. If you're not familiar, if you go to IG and look at him, he's a performance trainer. I came across him a few months ago. He is teaching exercises that I was actually learning 10 or 15 years ago, but the difference is that he has put it together into a system. I was doing a version of these exercises, but now when I see it, I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is, I was doing stuff like this years ago. He's just put it together. But this is a guy who went from an 18-inch vertical to a 14-inch vertical. He was the worst athlete on his team. He had three knee surgeries before the age of 20. And now he's jumping over 40 inches and dunking. And he has 2,000 success stories with getting people out of knee pain. So that's huge. I would check out Knees Over Toes, and I'm probably going to be stealing some of his exercises to add to the membership site later this year when the weather gets better and I can film some content. So I want to pull up a video for high. So just give me a moment here. And again, if you have any questions or about training, about practice schedule, about your mindset, you can tap it into the nutrition. You can tap it in, type it into the chat box. I'm going to see if I can find this video that I want to show that is actually related to the body, what we just were talking about, because I saw something with high. He's doing amazing, by the way. Hi, what level are you? And remind me again, how much are you playing? And what are some of your goals? I'd love to hear about that. I am going to, let's see if I can find this video. If I can't find it, oh, I found it. Oh, this is so good. Okay, so glad I found it because I didn't want to just explain it. I want to really show it. I'm going to share my screen. Okay, just practicing at home. Do hear some background noise. Maybe someone came in. I'm going to make sure I mute. Okay, great. All right. So sharing my screen, we're going to go through. High is doing shadow strokes at home. And so this first exercise that I want to show is he's doing kind of side to side movement. I love the focus. You know, I was doing shadow strokes in my late 20s, and it was one of the things that helped me break the top 100 in the world. Now, what's really important is you have to have good form and good footwork when you do it. That's why if you study my videos, you can just do your best to model what I'm teaching and try to make it more of a habit. But we're looking at high here. And the first thing I would say, let's just watch it in real time, okay? So the first thing that I would say, hi, and by the way, you're doing awesome with your split step. And I don't know how slippery it is in this basement, so you got to be careful. But what I would do with your split step is when you get to here and you split, I'd like to see you move out of the split faster. So what's happening, so what's happening is you're splitting, but you're stopping. And so if you look into the Baseline Footworks course, I have a whole lesson in Baseline Footworks called Split and Move. It's in the prepare phase. And unfortunately, I didn't pull that up tonight. But what I want to show is when you split here, you just kind of stop. So you split and then you kind of stop. And then you actually, when you split right there, you actually step back a little bit, right, with this foot. So I want you to split and move, come out of the split and make the move. So it's a little bit quicker. Now, if that's too hard for you to do, don't worry about the split. Just stand there and then start moving into your footwork pattern. And then we can add the split step later. Because I find if people just split and stop, then they're ingraining the pattern of not reacting out of the split. So that's the first thing that I see. The second thing that I see is I like that move up to the ball. I think that you're kind of sliding. But I actually think you could hop, but what I would study, and let me go over to the members area real quick. If I go into the gold, if I go into gold, we got too many windows open tonight already. Okay, here we go. If you go to the forehand footwork, and if you watch step, shuffle, hit, I think that you'll see that I'm a little bit lighter on my feet. Instead of shuffling, there's a little bit, I want to say a little bit of a hop or a gallop up to the ball. So you kind of, I'm kind of pushing off the balls of the feet. So what I want you to do, Hai, is I want you to compare, and all of you, I want you to study this step, shuffle, hit footwork and notice my movement. And if you compare it to Hai's, he's just a little stiffer, you know, a little bit stiffer than I am. Again, he's learning the movement, so I don't expect it to be perfect. But I'd like a little bit more bounce in the step, like a little bit more bounce. So we've got the split step. Don't stop after the split. Keep moving. And then we got a little bit smoother. It still looks good. This is not bad. It just could be a little more refined, which you can work on. With the technique, I think it looks good. I don't know how, if you actually swing like this when you play, there's a couple things here I would tweak right in here. Maybe the racket face could be a little bit more closed there. And then watch, here's what I want you to see. This is where we get in a little bit of trouble with the shadows. What I want you to see here is that when you're going, see how you're bringing your leg around, but you haven't made contact yet. So this is the contact point, but you're already moving this leg. So what I want you to work on, and this is probably the most important thing. That's back at this exercise here. Let's see if I can advance it fast enough here. Yeah, okay. Okay, so actually this is not a square up. This is not the right video. Here, I'll just show you step in square up. This doesn't have the gallop up to the ball or the shuffle step up to the ball. All right, here we go. So I want you to see, Hai, where, look at where my back foot is. It's still back. So when you make contact, you want to keep the back foot back like I am there, and then you're going to bring the leg around. See how much later I bring the leg around? That's the whole key. Most people are swinging their leg around too early, and that's what causes some challenges, some over-rotation. So when you're making contact right there, your foot, your back foot should still be, the toe should be on the ground as if you were going to keep that foot back. And then you can bring your leg around. Now, when you finish high, and this goes back to what we were talking about with knees over toes right here, you're pretty high right here. There's not a lot of knee bend. So if it's not comfortable for you to bend your knees more, you need to practice doing these mini squats. And so this is why I wanted to bring up the horse stance lesson. This would be a great one, Gunner, even for you at age 8, I would be practicing the horse stance, because what I want you to see, a lot of players, when they finish their swing, they stick their butt back like this. So what I want players to do is when they're done, they're going to tuck the tail like this. And you can see I have a slight knee bend. I could probably be bending more. And I think I do at the end. Not too much here, but let's compare this to high. And even though I'm not bending my knees that much, you can kind of see that I'm sitting back a little bit more, just a little bit, not a lot. So high, I would work on just bending the knees a little bit, and kind of, you can see how my upper body is, it's almost like, I don't want to say leaning back because I don't want you leaning back too much, but you're just a little bit forward, just a little bit. So try to get in a wider base and bend your knees a little bit more. And you could hold that position for 30 seconds and burn your quads. And when you do that, the knees actually go over the toes, right? Can you see my knees here? If I were to bend my knees like this, my knees are going to go forward over the toes, and you need to build strength in these areas. Okay. All right. So that is what I'm going to say about that. Hi, you got that. Let's go look at your other video real quick on the serve, because everybody can learn some things with the serve. So hi, I'm watching your serve video earlier, and I have a couple questions. So the first thing is, okay, so you're starting in your half serve position, which I love. This is great. So the first thing that I would do, and I think Christy and Herman know what I'm going to say here. I'm going to pull up half serve. The racket, I want the wrist to be more relaxed here. So notice how your racket strings are pointing towards your couch, kind of towards your window. Notice how my strings are pointing more down into the net. That's because my wrist is a little more relaxed. You're holding the racket like this, and I'm relaxed with my wrist. So I would change the setup just a little bit at the beginning. And then you're pretending to toss. That's a really nice turn. Now, right here, and this is a subtle thing, we want the wrist to be a little more relaxed here. So the racket is a little more vertical. You see how the strings are kind of facing, they're going towards the ceiling and like more towards this front wall here. Let's see what I do when I turn. Okay. Let's see what my racket does when I turn. Let's see what it looks like when I hit the ball. I don't know if we're going to be able to tell on this example. Let's see. Here we go. Okay. So I don't know if you all can tell right there, but my racket is more vertical. It's more straight up and down. So I'm holding my, so a lot of people when they serve, let's see if my, is my video up? I think it's up. So when they hold the racket, they hold it a little bit, high doesn't do it that much. Like a lot of people like hold it like this. He's about like there, but you can actually relax your wrist, call it ulnar deviation. Thank Christy for helping me with this. You get the racket more vertical like this when the wrist is in this position, and then it can flip back. But if you have it cocked like this, then you're going to have a lot of tension. And that's when the racket goes behind the body like this. So the racket could be a little more vertical. What I would do high is go into, let me see if I have it. Let me see if I have that lesson. If it's not, I'm going to add it to Serve Fundamentals Unlocked. I want to add this lesson. This is a really good one. See if I have it in the bonus section. It's the it's called the phone booth lesson. So it looks like I have not added it here yet. So I'm going to add the phone booth lesson in here, but I talk all about how you want to keep your racket in the phone booth. That's more when the racket gets too far away, but it still can apply because when people go this way down the side, that behind their body, it's not as efficient. So then let me keep this going. So I like that. So high, this looks good too. I mean, your racket is really dropping. That's awesome. I'm happy with that. The racket is kind of turned a little excessively there. You might be doing that because you want to learn, a continental grip. If you've had a forehand grip, I'd be okay with that. But in a real match, we wouldn't want to see it that extreme right there, if you know what I mean. Kind of rotates, but you do a great job of rotating your shoulder. Only thing I would say is, can you keep your body more sideways right there? It's like, hold your body, because by the time you make contact, see how your shoulders are facing? So let me show you. And again, you might think, oh, man, he's giving so much time to high. Well, here's the thing. This is the same stuff that I see everybody else doing. So you just want to perfect, or you want to master the concepts that I'm teaching here. So if I go for topspin serve here, let me show you the difference, high. So if you watch me do this drill right here, and you could do this at home too, but what I want you to notice is, here's what I want you to know. Look at the racket right there. See how it's on edge? I guess you could call it on edge. So your racket right there, see how the strings are facing this way instead of towards the piano? My strings are facing towards the net right there. And yours is kind of turned too much. Now, again, you might be doing that because you want to learn how to rotate your shoulder, which if that's the case, then I'm good with that. It's rotated too much down here. But then when you make contact right there, look at your body and your shoulders, okay? Now look at mine when I hit it. Do you see how much more sideways I am than you? Look at that, almost 90. I'm almost 90 degrees there, and you're almost facing the net. And then your offhand is down to the side. When you're doing this drill, I would try to get more, I would try to be here when I'm swinging with my shadow swing. See how I'm doing this? But you go there when you do it. So I want you to keep your body here, and then this off arm can actually be tucking in. Look at my off arm. It tucks in towards my belly button right there. And you should tuck this hand in towards the belly button. Turn this down. So I'm here when I'm making that move. So let me summarize. I would work on the first move. Okay. The ulnar deviation, you could do a little bit, but I wouldn't be as worried about that. That's down the road. I just work on that first move. And then I would work on staying sideways at contact. Those would be the top two things I would give you. The secondary things would be the ulnar deviation with the racket more vertical. And the last thing that I would give you is back here, don't have the racket so turned in this position, okay? A little more on edge like this. And I would study this lesson right here, which should be in, if you all haven't found it yet, it's in the drills section. This is not the program. We gotta find gold. Here we go. So these bonus serve drills right here, I would go to, and I remember my team, I saw that it wasn't there yet. Yeah, it's right here. Topspin kick serve drill. I'd look at that. I'd look at the dirty diapers. Okay. Let me stop the share and tune in and see what people have been saying. Got it. Thanks. Ulnar deviation. Erwin dropped the phone booth concept in YouTube. Awesome, high, good stuff. Okay, so how does that relate to someone where I just didn't analyze the serve? Again, starting in the half motion position and really trying to get the racket in a good position at the beginning. That's a big key that I just talked about. Having the body more sideways at contact in the beginning, learning topspin, that's a big key. And then the subtle things of the ulnar deviation and the racket drop position, those are things to consider as well. Okay. Brian asks, what is the viability of a topspin slice serve as a first serve wide? Topspin slice serve as a first serve wide that goes deep to my opponent's forehand. Yeah, I mean, if you can hit a topspin slice, I mean, if you, I never really call it a topspin slice. It's either a slice or it's topspin, but if there's some combination, I'm all good with that. And do you have a video on the topspin slice wide? Yeah, so I could see if I can make a video for that down the road. I think I understand what you're talking about. It's more of like a Pat Rafter kind of topspin that has some slice on it. I don't think I have a video on that, no. Because honestly, most people need to really work on either hitting topspin or slice, and then we can combine that later. I might have a Patrick Rafter lesson in Tennis Serve Masterclass, which you would need to be a member of Platinum, but I can't remember if I have it in there. Most videos out there focus on slice serves that land short and really wide. Here's what I do. I just go with I call it a power slice. You might call it a topspin slice. I call it a power slice, and I aim deep to the corner and I make sure my target is big, so I don't worry so much about the short slice. Okay, let's move on. Let's see who is next that I haven't given as much attention to lately. I'm skipping through here. Actually, most folks I handled the last couple of weeks. So I'm going to answer a couple of questions. So this is from Shawshank, who I believe is on. Sir, I have a question on lead taping rackets for adding weight. I initially used lead tape when I was playing an opponent who was at a real hard hitter. I don't think lead tape made a tremendous impact to my game, and its use was probably all psychological. And now I'm reluctant to use my racket unless it's weighted with lead tape. I fear it's now more of a crutch. I'd appreciate any guidance or opinion you have on using lead taping in this way. I hope you are doing great, and I love everything you do and teach. It's a privilege to learn from you, sir. Oh, thank you very much. That's very nice of you to say. Shawshank, with the lead tape, I'll be honest, there are some things I'm really good at and there are some things I'm really not good at. I can't cook. I'm not the cleanest like I don't always keep my room clean. I don't like to do my own laundry, and I don't know much about lead tape. Isn't that funny? I've been playing this game for 40 years and I know some pro tennis players that are obsessed with lead tape, obsessed with their rackets, obsessed. That's almost like OCD would drive me nuts. And so what I used to do when I played on the tour is I had someone who did it for me. And I had a racket technician, just like I have a web developer for my website. I don't build my own websites. I hire someone and I pay them. And then I don't have stress. I try to keep my stress level down below a 3 out of 10 for most of my life. Okay. Sometimes we get it to about a 5. Very rare that it gets above that. So I try to de-stress myself, and lead tape would add stress. So I hired experts to do that for me. I don't know where you live. But there are some great guys that understand rackets. They understand lead tape. They understand where to put the lead on the racket. And I always just try to find the best. What I would probably do is start searching on the forums online, Tennis Warehouse and others. You probably come across some people that know a lot more about it than I do. There's a gentleman by the name of Roman Prokes. He has a place in New York City called RPY. Anybody that wants custom rackets done, I send people to him, and he can probably work with you virtually even. And there are other folks out there as well. There's a Jay Bosworth down in Florida. These guys have worked with Davis Cup players, number one players. They really understand rackets. And so and one last thing I want to say about this. When I was playing on the tour, Pete Sampras was the best player in the world, and he had the heaviest racket, and he played with a Wilson Pro Staff. And then over the years, as technology has developed, when Roddick came out, he played with the Babolat Pure Drive, and he played with a light racket. It had lead tape on it, but he played with a light racket. And now Rafa Nadal plays with a light racket. So the rackets have typically gotten lighter over time. These players are playing with the lighter rackets. And it's very important where you put the lead tape in. Is it in the head? Is it in the racket face, you know, the middle of the racket, or is it in the throat? And so some players like it head heavy, some head light. It really just depends. If you put too much weight on the tip of the racket, it can weigh the racket down and it can slow down your racket head speed. Okay. I hope that helped a little bit. Sorry, I'm not a true expert at the racket tech stuff there. Okay, let's keep moving with questions. Where'd they go? Excuse me, had to plug in here, down to 11%. Okay. Next question. I am going to select Jerome. Jerome is one of our members that has been with us the longest, I believe. He's been a huge fan of my work. I believe he's a USPTA pro and has been following the game for many years and always sends in enlightening questions. And I just appreciate him being such a supporter over the years. Jerome's question tonight is, I've heard commentators at Grand Slam tournaments occasionally infer that when the player is returning a groundstroke, when he is in a cramped position, that he should not lean his weight too much in the direction of his target. Jeff, what is your take on this? Does this mean he should lean his weight away from the direction of the target? So great question. And I tend to agree with the commentator saying that when you're returning a groundstroke and you're in a cramped position, you should not lean the weight in the direction of the target. So what happens is when you get too close to the ball, you need to find a way to get away from the ball and create space. And one example that I can give, and Gunner, if you're listening out there, this is for you someday when you get older. Next couple of years, you could start practicing this cool move. And what I want you to do, Gunner and others, I want you to start studying Federer and Djokovic doing this move that I'm about to show you all. So let me pull this up. It's very important that if you overrun a ball, you find a way to create space. And it's absolutely huge. And so what I'm going to show right now is something that I call the switch footwork pattern. And we see this when you get pushed back. And again, this is for more advanced, if you can jump. I don't recommend it for people that stay on the ground and play the game on the ground. So you'll see this is me right here. Just hide this video. So what I'm showing here is as I'm moving back, so I'm moving back for the ball. So I'm teaching how to move back. So now I'm loaded up in this position here. And if the ball is close to me in this position, I've got to jump away from it. So you see how I'm jumping away. So if the ball is here, look, if the ball is here and I just stay there, I can get too close to the ball. If I jump back, straight back, I'm too close to the ball. But if I jump and go away, so I create space, and that's how you can create that acceleration and that circular force. And so this is a great example of moving away from the ball if you were to get jammed. And it's called a switch pattern because we're loading the outside leg, and look at my chest here. And when you land, you're doing a full 180 degree turn and you land on the other leg. That's a switch. You're switching from one leg to the other leg. So that's one example. Now, Jerome, I don't know other examples. I can't picture other examples where you're too close and then you pull away. I'm thinking of the a backhand where you go to step in and you realize you're too close and then you pull up and away a little bit. You'll see the pros do that. So it's kind of interesting because most coaches will tell everyone, stay down, lean into the shot. But that actually can create more problems than good. On certain shots, okay? Not every shot, but certain shots. Okay. How do I follow up on whether you have a raft or slicer video already? Otherwise, that would be a great video. I would imagine that you, as a lefty, I'm gonna have to look, Brian, in the Tennis Serve Masterclass to see if I did a rafter video. Herman, if you're on, maybe you can take a quick look to see if you see anything that's titled rafter. to confirm that. Otherwise, I'm going to have to make that video at some point. And let me just make a note of that. And Herman is just, he's on it. So we're going to find out in a few minutes. And then the next comment here is, do you still use HeartMath? And do you think it can help improve a person's tennis match play? So yes, I do HeartMath. I believe that any type of meditation, any type of chance that you can slow your breathing down is huge. And HeartMath is one of the best tools out there. I think the mistake people will make, though, is that they start doing it and then all of a sudden they expect that they're going to play better. So they've created an expectation because they're doing HeartMath. So you really want to do it for the benefits of managing stress, managing the moment, but realize that it still may not make a difference if you have certain deficiencies with how you move and your technique. So it's part of the training, but it's not the be all end all. It's really about experimenting. Another thing that I just typed in the chat box that you all can test out or check out is something called BrainTap. And BrainTap is an incredible technology that's been developed where you wear these headphones with almost like subliminal messages or music, and then it pumps light into your ears and to your brain. So you relax and it resets your brain while you're getting these subliminal messages about how great you are. So I own a BrainTap. I just got it and studied it from these, you know, high performers. So I would look at BrainTap. It's a little pricey, but I think it's one of the best technologies out there to rewire your brain and your subconscious. And then of course, HeartMath has stood the test of time for 20 plus years with all the research. If you're not familiar with what HeartMath is, it's basically a device that you can download the app and you get a Bluetooth device where you put it on your ear, you fasten it to your ear, and then you hook it up, you connect it to your Bluetooth or your phone, and it regulates your breathing. And if you're focusing on a renewing emotion like compassion or appreciation or care, it actually creates coherence within your body. So now your heart and the rest of your body are in coherence. You're in the flow state. So long-winded answer, Michael, I would say that I would do it. I would do it consistently. If it can help you regulate your heart and get you into coherence, you can improve your reaction time. You can improve your decision-making. So I would say the answer is yes, with the caveat that if you start doing it, don't automatically expect that you're going to, you know, start playing better because you did it. Everybody's going to have different experiences, but I would highly recommend everybody do HeartMath, because not only will it help, there you go. I'm using Heart. So was that like a trick question, Michael? Because you asked me if you should use it. Now you're telling me you're already doing it. I'm using HeartMath and it's helping me to stay focused, and I'm winning now and not losing leads as much. So there you go. Amazing. And that's what it's all about. So if you can stay focused longer, if you can avoid the frustration feelings, it can be a huge resource. It's very similar to the corrective exercises that I talked about in the beginning. I emphasize those more because I want people to understand if they want to change their technique, they have to change their body. But to be honest, I really should start out every call reminding people to do HeartMath, because it's just as powerful. It's just, you don't know when you're going to get the results. Do you get it the next time you go out? Do you get it a month later? Do you get it 6 months later? These things show up at mysterious times, and you need to make sure that you don't have the expectations, but you just keep showing up consistently day after day to practice. So great question. Let's get to Juan and his forehand. Oh, that's great. You know, the other benefits around the HeartMath, Michael, is this has been proven to improve immune function, improve sleep, improve recovery, being able to handle stress, and especially during these times when there's a lot of stress out there, there's a lot of uncertainty, there's a lot of negative propaganda and news out there from all angles and all sides. And so if you can keep your wits about you and stay composed on and off the court, you're ahead of the game. You're ahead of 99% of folks out there. So it's a great tool. Let's look at Juan and his forehand tonight. Great call so far. Appreciate the questions and everything. So here's Juan. And so Bogota, Colombia, looks beautiful there, nice and sunny. So we're looking at a forehand return. So three forehands, ball about 8,000 feet in Colombia. The ball's flying everywhere. Okay, so let's talk about it. So the couple things that I see, Juan, right off the bat. So first off, on the forehand return, and I talked about this on the call last week, and I got the video ready for you. So what I want you to see, I like your first move. It looks quite nice. I might try to get the elbow and the hands away a little bit more and get the off arm a little bit straighter. So create a bigger ball away from you here. Instead of being here, try to create a bigger ball, okay? We don't want it locked and stiff, but we want more space. Again, if I were to watch all of your forehands tonight, if you all sent me forehands in, I would say 80 to 90%, I'm gonna tell you to create more space on your first move. So even though I'm telling Juan this, I'm actually telling you this. Now, that's the first thing. The next thing is, last week we talked about the forehand put away. So I'm gonna put this into the forehand put away bucket. And if you remember, if you were on the call last week, here's the difference I want you to see. And I realize this is a different court. This is a deuce court versus ad court. So he's coming up to the ball. Okay, so it's a different ball, but here's the thing I want you to see, and you guys can comment. Let's do a chat here, chat box answers. What are the differences you see between Juan's forehand and Simon's forehand over here? Go ahead and type in the chat box and let me know. And I'm gonna share it back in a moment here. Okay. What are the differences that you see between this Simon preparation and Juan's preparation? Again, most people are going to struggle with a couple of these concepts. I see two big things here. I'm going to look at the answers.
Blowing up. It's like on the radio.
I know, everyone knows about it.
So off arm for Christy, non-hitting arm more horizontal with Simon's prep. Exactly. More knee bend, more loading, most athletic stance, first move elbow and footwork load, more rotation, more space. Juan is more straight up and down. Exactly. I'm telling you, you should be teaching the class because those are the two things. Those are the two things. Your first move with that arm pulled across, creating the space, looking more like Simon. We just talked about that. But the second is the legs. Juan, my friend, I love you, Juan, but where are the legs on this shot? And remember what did we talk about earlier? We talked about horse stance and we talked about high. This is where I'm going to pull it all together for you. I'm getting it here. Like we're pulling it together. High. I said, hey, you got to use your legs more. You got to get down a little bit more. Why are we all playing up high? Do you think we're playing up high because we want to play up high? I think we're playing up high because we haven't trained our lower body. We haven't gone knees over toes. We haven't done single leg squats. We haven't done horse stance enough. So we're going to play where we're comfortable, but we've got to build the leg strength and play lower. This guy played Division I tennis. Not a surprise that he understands how to load. So Juan, I would really work on just three times a week. Maybe it's every day, 30 seconds a day, get into this position and hold it. Send me a video or a picture of what it looks like and see if you can model this in the next week. model the first move, model the load. Okay. It's a big one. So, that would make a huge difference if you improve those two areas on your forehand. You don't have to complicate it. I've given you the answer. Just get better at those two things. Now, I am going to add more things, but that's the beginning for you. Okay. So let's go next. All right. So the next thing is the ball comes and you get up to the ball and now you're on your front foot. Now, if you're on your front foot like this, and that looks pretty good with your contact, but we're going to talk about this in a second. So this looks pretty good, but here, look, see how you're taking the ball kind of at the shoulder. If you're going to take it at the shoulder, you want to open up your stance like this and go off your outside leg and jump in the air and land on your front foot just like that. And it should look more like that instead of just stepping in. The ball's getting up on you, so that's where you want to jump. Or you can hop off of your front foot and do a lift and land. And so I have a video for you as well here, the runaround footwork pattern. It's a different shot because I'm moving here, but I want you to see the feet at the end. So I get around this ball and look at my feet. I'm on my front foot. See, I'm on my front foot. And then I'm gonna hop. And see, I'm hopping to the side. This is slow motion, so I'm just gonna play it. See that? Jumping and hopping. So we either need that lift and land, jump and hop, or we need the back to front footwork, okay? But it's gonna be hard to do that if you don't get the load at the beginning, okay? So now you swing, and then what I want you to see is you're swinging up on this ball. See how you go up on this ball, and then you finish down? That's fine to do, in my opinion, if you're making contact maybe here, but you could have actually moved up to this ball and caught it right there at the shoulder. And then you could have swung more down into the pocket like this right here. See where he goes on with his swing? Look at his swing on this ball. He swings across. He's swinging across right there. And you're swinging way up. So on a second serve, I think this is a second serve. Second serve, if you want to be offensive, you should be watching this lesson. It's in module 6, and you should model this on the return. Make a huge difference, and make a huge difference for everybody if you practice that. First, you got to get the leg strength going. Okay, so now we got this ball. So good. We need more legs here. We need more load. We need more jump. And this is where you could have maybe done a switch pattern, what we talked about earlier. Your technique is quite good. I got to say, your technique is quite good right there. I love it. I like your technique a lot. I think with you, it's more legs. It's a lot more legs. And then right there, something happens with your wrist, Juan, right? When you swing, you're looking good right there. It looks good. But then you actually bring the wrist back kind of, and then you turn it over again. Just keep turning that hand and don't go, you went here and then here and then here. I don't know if you can see that. So you're good, you're good, you're good, you're good, you're good, not so good, not so good right there. And then you're good again. And when you're 3 feet behind the baseline like this, finish over your shoulder with this swing. Don't finish down by the pocket. So I've given you about 5 things that if you just work on this for the next year, like chip away at the things I just said, if you have to edit these 5 minutes, you know, of the, just watch these 5 minutes of the video, your forehand could get huge because you have a really good, you have good technique. Okay. Ball comes, load again. We need more load and we need more jump if possible. And then you jump away from it with a bigger switch pattern, which is what we talked about earlier. Same thing. Swing looks good. Maybe a little more hand turn earlier and then a higher finish. Finish over the shoulder when you're behind the baseline. Let me say that again. Finish over the shoulder when you're behind the baseline. Okay. Good stuff right there. There was good content. Nice going. Thank you for sharing. And I know people were picking you apart, but this is how we learn. Everybody means well. Okay. Let's see how we're doing on what's next here. Got Shawshank. Got him. I got Adam, got him. Got high. I got Jerome. I'm just moving these so I can keep track of everyone. Okay. William, let's talk about your serve, William. Thanks for sending it in. And your question was, and I'm going to have to pull up your email here again. William sent in videos from a couple weeks ago. William is from Colorado, just about an hour north of me here. Love to have the fellow Coloradans. Just give me a minute. I need to go dig out the question because I want to get this right. William, I believe, is relatively new to what we're doing over here. Question came in from Adam. Are you still the director of JS Performance Tennis School? No, that JS Performance was what I was doing when I was teaching on the court years ago. And it's probably still showing up in the search engines, but I'm not. We don't have that going anymore. Okay. So William's question. In my last video, I was dropping my racket before pushing up with my legs. Are these any better? It seems to me I have to start the racket drop as I come up with my legs, or I don't have enough time to make contact with the ball. Okay, so what we're talking about now is the racket drop of the serve, and I'll be sharing my screen in a moment here. The racket drop of the serve and how it relates to the leg drive. So this is something I was teaching in the Racket Fit seminar last week, and this is one of the characteristics that we teach. And we taught this 2 weeks ago as well. I'm going to teach it again. So this is a video, I believe, William, from a couple weeks ago that you sent to me. And what I like about your serve a lot, I mentioned this before, I really like your first move. You have a great turn, better than most. I love this position. This is looking really nice. This is Federer-esque right now. This is, again, better than 99%. Where your serve can improve is in this second phase. So I consider the first, well, let's say the first phase is just like getting in a nice setup position. So the first phase would be, okay, how does the grip work? How does grip look? How does the stance look? How does the starting position look? I give it a B+. There's some things that could improve, but you're way ahead of the game here. So that's phase one. Phase two would be, all right, what happens in this first move when the ball is released? Wow, look at that shoulder turn. Look at that racket position. I might as well be looking at Roger Federer right now. That's what I'm thinking. Okay. And so now the racket comes up, and this is right there is when I'm like, oh, some things are starting to break down right here in the trophy. So here are a couple of the things that are breaking down. So when you toss the ball, this is looking good. This is looking good. Now you kind of have to chase the toss, and you pick up your foot and you're moving to the right. So that's one big thing that we want. We want to keep that foot more stable. So that means the toss might have to come a little bit more. Let me move this down. Toss might have to come a little bit more to the left. So you're not chasing this toss. Okay. I know you're going to go see Brad Ott, but getting these hips to load properly will help with all of this. Okay. But the next thing is the ball is right here and your legs are bent, but you're still kind of bending and chasing, and you've already dropped your racket. This is called an early racket drop. I know that's what you're trying to fix. Now, this is the video you just sent in. It looks like you're not stepping to the right as much. You're stepping more forward. But what we want to see is you're turning and there's not a lot of load in the back leg. So I think your serve would really improve and the racket drop concept would improve if you learned how to load into the back leg. So let me just go over, a reminder for everyone. This is another example that I think can really help. William, I would be doing, the four exercises here: mini squat, load the back leg, load and jump, back leg, load front foot hike, back leg, load thoracic rotation. If you don't want to jump, that's fine. You could just do mini load back leg. I don't think this one's jumping front foot. This would be huge. The back leg load front foot hike. And then the back leg load thoracic rotation. Those would be huge for you because I don't see a lot of load in the back leg. This one, I see like you're bending your leg, but you're not really loading into this hip. And again, I can tell you to do this till you're blue in the face, but someone like Brad is going to be able to really coach you up since he's a physical therapist and he's so close to you. He can help you load the back leg. But what's happening is because you're not loading and you're bending right there, the racket, you're trying to get power from the racket. So let's go back and look at this example. Now, this is a good position, ulnar deviation, his racket is up. I like this. But what's happening is, again, look at the racket has already dropped. So you asked me, is it any better? And I'm going to say it hasn't really changed. And this is kind of what I said earlier is you're going to have to slow this down and not worry about hitting the ball. Are you hitting a ball? Or are you shadowing? Yeah, you're hitting a ball. So as soon as the ball is in place, you're going to default to your old tech, your current technique. So I would take the ball out of it. And I would really, because your racket is here way too early. So you have to change your whole kind of like way of serving. You're going to be changing how you serve if you want to get this. As I said earlier, there's other ways to improve your game. You don't have to go down this road, but I'm going to tell you what I would do. If we were working together on a court, here's what I would do. I would eliminate the ball at the beginning and I would make you serve with half serve. So if we go back to my serve again, say, all right, your racket would stay right there. That's a good position right there. Looks very similar to this. Now watch what happens. Again, watch what happens when my legs, see my racket's starting to drop a little bit, but it's not in a full drop. The racket tip is still up. My legs are fully bent. So when you get to your deepest knee bend right there, your racket has already dropped. It's way ahead of the game. So now watch what happens when I start to fire up. When I fire up, now the racket starts to drop. So your legs go first. It's this kinetic change. Your legs go first, then the racket drops. So what I would do is I would do half serves. And what I would do is I would toss the ball in the air. And then I would actually toss and bend and just hold that position without doing anything and let the ball drop on the ground. Then the next thing I would do is I would toss and bend. And then I would keep this racket here 10 times longer than you think. You're going to have to exaggerate 10 times longer than you think. And you're not allowed to drop the racket. You're not even going to be hitting a ball right now. You're not allowed to drop the racket until your legs start to straighten. And you're going to drop this racket so much later than you think is possible. And it's going to feel so weird. And it's going to feel so awkward. And you can record it and send it to us for the next call. But you really have to exaggerate. You really have to keep the racket in this position right there until you go up to the ball. You are not allowed to bring it down here. You break the rule. It's like if we had a zapper, every time you did it, you'd get zapped. No zapping. The racket's going to stay right here. And when you go up with your legs, then you're allowed to drop. And you're just going to change the sequencing. You can do it with your eyes closed. You can swing at an imaginary ball. But do that a lot to see if you can get the feeling. This is looking good right here. It's just you're going too early right there. Okay, it's just we have to reverse the sequence. Okay, I hope that helps. I hope that makes sense. You're welcome, Juan. Adam said, have you answered the questions? I did answer your questions. You were the first one, Adam. Glad you're learning a lot, Juan. Thank you. Okay, so let's go to, see who's next. I want to go to, excuse me, I'm going to go to Ron, take a look at his serve. Okay. Could you comment on these technical matters related to the serve? Some very well-qualified coaches advocate tilting back and keeping your weight back, Macy and Kovacs, before launching upwards. Almost a shot put type of action. Some others, very well qualified, also disagree, de-emphasizing a substantial tilt. Your thoughts, Ron? Okay, so the thing in question, let me see if I can find a picture that would represent this. It'd be cool if I have it. I'm not seeing it. So how would I show this? So I'm gonna show the half serve and see if I can. Bear with me here. Okay. I'm going to show this again, the half serve. So the question is a good one, and it's one I've thought a lot about. It's one that I've taught for a long time. Let me handle William real quick. William says, but I don't seem to have time to get my racket to the ball if I wait so long to drop the racket. So yeah, I hear you. I think you have more time than you think. And again, the problem right now is the ball. So what you have to do is you have to change. You can't do this hitting the ball, because the ball, that's the, you're chasing the ball. In order to learn this, you actually want to toss the ball in the air and swing and miss. And I know that sounds weird, and I know it might be difficult to do on your own, like alone, to figure this out, but you can't hit the ball. You will go keep chasing the ball and dropping the racket early for the next 10 years unless you change the way that you're approaching this, which means you're going to have to swing and miss the ball until you get it. So what that's, I gave the prescription. What you're going to do is you're going to go half serve and you can bend your knees. And when you jump up to the ball, the racket can drop. And then what's going to happen is when you get the timing down, then the toss will actually be a result of you making the change. Instead of you chasing the ball, you're going to figure out how to get the right toss that works for this new way of doing it. Okay. Half serve. So the question is about this idea. Kovacs and Macy talk about like really kind of tilting the shoulders and loading the back leg. And for me, I have been in the other camp. I'm in the camp of working on turning your shoulders and not thinking about tilting your shoulders more and sticking your hip over the baseline. So I'm a big proponent, and I still want you loading the back leg. You're going to load the back leg a tremendous amount. But you want to think about having a nice turn, because I feel like the best servers in the world look more like this. And yeah, you can see my shoulders are tilted, but it's a function of turning and getting my tossing arm up and getting my hip in the right position. But if I exaggerate doing this and just tilting my shoulders like this, no disrespect to the experts that you mentioned, I just feel like you lose shoulder turn. The elbow can drop down low when you focus on tilting a lot. And so I'm in the camp that you focus on the turn and work on turning and coiling, like Sampras and Federer and even Roddick, guys like that. I like to model the best. And so I think we get into trouble when we focus on this, because like I said, we lose turn and we lose the elbow position. It drops. Now, if you can really dip and turn and keep your elbow up, it's great. But I found that when people try to exaggerate the tilt, then the other stuff suffers, the turn and the elbow position. Okay, Himanshu's question. Lots of questions from Himanshu. So Himanshu, it would definitely help if you were able to send in videos, because a lot of your questions are very specific. And sometimes it's kind of hard for me to picture what's happening, but I'm going to tackle um, I'm just looking at your questions. I'm going to tackle one of them. And also, I always tell people, listen, if I'm not able to give you enough time on the calls and you want to do more one-on-one work, you can send me an email and I can tell you how I do that. Okay. Himanshu, if you're on the call, why don't you let me know of all the questions you sent in, which one that you would like the most help on? I will defer. I'll wait till you send that in. And then if you do send that in, I'll answer one of them. Thanks. Okay. Going to Gene Ali now. Gene's been really modeling the serve. Let's see how it looks tonight. So with Gene Ali, he's been working a lot on his topspin serve. And you'll notice his half position, I really like it. I like the racket position. He's really modeled it. I really like modeled what we teach. I really like the stance. I like the first move a lot. So this is very nice. Good job. The one thing I would say that he could get better at is he's not really loading into the back leg. So I think that's going to impact him. Again, we do those four exercises that I've been talking about where you practice loading the back leg all day. Now, he said he's been doing the exercises. So maybe Gene Ali, you could, I know you're not, I don't think you're on the call tonight, but you could send in your exercises of doing them so I can see what they look like. But I'd like to see more load in the back leg. Now, what Gene Ali was doing is at contact, he was too sideways. He was actually too sideways, which he overcompensated, which I'd rather see than someone facing the net. But if you can see, William, I know you're struggling finding, like if you don't drop it early enough, you can't find the ball. You know, Gene drops it a little early as well, just a smidge. He could wait a little longer too. So again, he could keep the racket here longer. And then when he see how he's full bend right there, it's close. He's actually pretty good. So I'm splitting hairs there. But if you can see, he's doing it. So for you, it might be maybe it's making the toss go higher. Maybe, William, I'm getting some ideas here. You need to go slower at the beginning, because if you go really fast, if you go really fast at the beginning and drop it, then you're going to keep everything fast. Maybe you need to go slower. Actually, that could be the opposite problem. Now that I'm thinking about it, if you go slower, you say you don't have enough time. But I feel like you go pretty fast to here. So forget what I just said. The part I want you to work on, again, you're in my head now because I'm thinking of how can I help you? When you basically have to, I think you should go actually a little bit slower so that right when you get to here, then you can fire and go. But if you come too fast and too early, then it's here and then you're jumping and the racket's already here. So we got to slow down the beginning part, I think. Okay, back to Gene Ali. So ideally we would want him to be able to clear his elbow and his hand out a little bit more elbow the enemy. But that looks good. That looks good. I'm not exactly sure what Gene Ali wanted me to look at. Let me look real quick. I've been doing the exercise. Please see. Yeah, so he didn't really ask a specific question. Overall, I like what I see a lot. So Gene Ali, you would just need to ask me what your questions are, but I like what I see. I think, again, loading the back leg would be nice if you could sit back in that leg a little better. But there's a lot of people that still hit big kick serves without loading. And then it would be nice if we could get you a little more turn with the hand and the elbow, like away from the body. And again, I don't know if that's, you know, how that's going to feel, but if you look at the difference here, how my hand is cleared away and my elbow cleared away from my head, and he's kind of tucked in there. So I think that's limiting him a little bit, a little more elbow the enemy, I would say. Overall though, I like what I see. And then we've talked before, Gene Ali, when you make contact, I know this has been hard for you, keeping this leg straight. There is a drill in the Tennis Serve Masterclass, so you'd have to be platinum, but it could be in the serve drills, but I actually have folks kind of click their feet together to make sure their legs stay straight. But overall, I like what I see. Good stuff. Okay. When I toss slightly above the head and still do a flat serve, the swing path Yeah, some of these questions are hard to read too. The ball kind of goes flat and then jumps, but I'm not able to return those, especially in doubles. I'm framing them. So what I think Himanshu is saying is that when people serve with topspin, the ball kind of jumps on the return. He's mishitting, he's framing. I tried the power block, but that didn't really work when the ball was flat. Yeah, I can't understand this question, Himanshu. I'm sorry. What would you suggest as a swing path and finish? So here's what I'm going to just explain. I'm gonna make up my own question and answer off of that. So let me show you all what I think he's talking about. And then I have an answer to another question for him because I pulled the video up. So this is great. So we'll get him covered. Where is that? There we go. Okay, awesome. So let's share the screen. All right, so it's about the return of serve. And so what he's been doing is trying the power block, where basically you swing and you catch the racket out in front like this. And it's not working because I think the ball is jumping up on him. So if the ball gets at your shoulder, you can't do the power block. If you're not familiar with what the power block is, check out the Serve Return Secrets. I believe I have a lesson on there. I have a lesson in there. It's either in the bonus section or the main section. Essentially, you're swinging and you're catching the racket early. This is a technique that I use that did help me break the top 100 in the world. It helped me qualify at the US Open. I think it's an amazing underrated technique that people are not practicing enough. But when the ball gets up high, you can't do it. It doesn't work as well. So when the ball gets up higher like this, you can see I'm taking this ball shoulder height. Okay, I'm jumping up. Look at that ball. It's at shoulder height. This is the same swing we talked about with Juan. And then watch my swing path. It goes up a little bit. See how it goes up, but it doesn't go up that high. And then I go across and I finish between my shoulder and my chest right there. And that it's, and I'm finishing on edge like this. The racket is on edge. So this is a very advanced technique. When the ball gets up the shoulder, you work on swinging across and you finish kind of relaxed on edge. This is a huge tip if you want to dominate second serve returns and the ball is at shoulder height. Okay, so that's answer number one for Himanshu. Let me get to the next question he had. He had a question if there was an equivalent shot on the backhand for a buggy whip forehand. So for those of you who haven't been following me for very long, I teach something called the buggy whip forehand. Instead of following through over your shoulder, you follow through above your head like Rafa Nadal, okay? You don't wanna go like this because you can hurt your shoulder doing it like that. You wanna go out and finish in front like this. So I always tell people on a regular forehand, you finish over the shoulder like this. Watch what happens if I just raise my hand 6 inches, I now have a buggy whip forehand. So the buggy whip is not that much different than a regular forehand. It's just finishing higher. And when you finish higher, guess what happens? The ball clears the net. We want to clear the net. We want more spin. Well, guess what? Finish higher. There's a reason Nadal does this. He wants more spin. He wants more height. He wants more consistency. Federer does it on the run. Djokovic does it on the run. Tommy Haas did it on the run. Sampras on the run. 90% of pros do the buggy whip. So the question is, are there any on the backhand side? So I call it the recoil. So basically, instead of a full follow through on your backhand, you're going to swing and you're going to stop the racket in front of you like this and almost bring it back to this side of the body. So watch what I do in this lesson right here. And this is on the one-hander, but you can do it on the two-hander as well. And it's a wide ball, but you could do it on a low ball in the middle. So watch what I do here. This is the equivalent of the buggy whip on the backhand. Okay, here we go. Ready? See what I just did with the racket? So I'll do it in full motion. So someone might say, my gosh, that is so weird. Why are you finishing on the same side? The reason why is that when you're on the run or you're dealing with a fast ball, if you swing across your body, there's a greater chance you're going to miss hit. So when you're running across like this, or if it's a really low fastball, you want to hit and you want to bring the back. It's like a recoil effect. It comes back like this. You're recoiling. and you see where I finish at the end. You'll see Federer do this on the run. Sampras does it on the run, and you can do it with the two-hander as well. All right, so I'm going to finish with Amir tonight. And Amir wanted me to take a look at his forehand. He did his serve last week. And we're going to finish with this video tonight. Okay, forehand time. Full motion. All right, so he's moving around the ball. He's moving around the ball. So he's got that inside out footwork pattern. Looks pretty good to me. What did we talk about earlier with Juan's forehand, everybody? I would say Amir is doing a good job of loading, but what about his first move? Do you see how his off arm, he doesn't space out enough? I said this earlier, 99% of players are not going to space out on the forehand the right way. So work on that big first move, get this elbow away more, create more space instead of being tucked in. Okay, alligator arms right there. Load looks good. Now, from here, we talked about this earlier. This would be a perfect opportunity to do the lift and land that I showed earlier. So let me show this again. Remember my inside in right here? So let's look at the difference between my footwork here. So I come around the ball. Okay, here we go. So look at the difference. So first move, look at my off arm. Okay. I mentioned this last week. My backswing is too big. It's one reason I didn't go higher than 100 in the world. I got in trouble with that big backswing back there. Okay. I've worked on even my older years shortening that. But look at what foot I'm off of. I'm off of my left foot. So I'd like to see him off of his left foot and hopping like this. So Amir could do this more. Now look at when I swing, even though my arm is bent, look at the space that I have. Now look at Amir's space. Is he too close to the ball? Yes. So the biggest thing is spacing. And the second biggest thing is he'll get more spacing if he jumps away from the ball, like Jerome asked about earlier. If you go off this left foot and you're jumping to the left, guess what you create? More space. That's the example right there. Let's look at the swing path. He's too close to the body. And then he finishes low. See where he finishes? Let's see where I finish. He's behind the baseline. I'm behind the baseline. Where does my racket go? Where does my racket go? Look at that. Look at where my racket is. See where his racket goes. Look at the difference. There's your difference right there. That's the difference between pro level right here and aspiring to be a pro. Okay. Much more extension, much more space. Work on that all day, every day. Look at the finish. The hand is below the chest. Look at my finish. Uh-oh. Above the shoulder, right there. Above the shoulder, just at the shoulder. And then at the end, where does it finish at the end? Oh, wow. It's still above the shoulder. Look at that. That is what I would work on right there. Okay? With that being said, we're going to end on that note. Let me summarize tonight. Number one, do your corrective exercises. Thanks to Michael tonight, do your heart math or your breathing exercises. Focus on a renewing emotion like appreciation or care. Okay. Two big things that are non-tennis stroke related. Number three, do your half serve motion to learn new technique. Number four, create more space on your forehand return and your backhand and your forehand ground stroke. Okay. And number five, keep working on your footwork. Work on your forehand footwork and master the footwork patterns. Those are five big takeaways from tonight. I had a blast. We got through every video. So what we're going to do is we'll have a call in 2 weeks' time. That'll be our February call. And I look forward to it. Please send in your videos and your questions and your comments. You all are awesome. I appreciate the commitment. You all have a great night tonight. Have a good one.